Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right now, at Cbus, we're building a new future for all of us. By building new projects in property, investing in infrastructure, and putting millions into Australian businesses, we're not only helping to create around 100,000 jobs, we're strengthening the economy. And with a history of strong, long-term performance, we're building a better, more secure future for all of us. To consider if Cbus is right for you, go to cbussuper.com.au for a PDS.
I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's the final word, India Daily. Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon. It's the third evening of the fourth and deciding Border Gavaskar Test match here at Brisbane, at the Gabba, a ground Australia knows and loves so very, very much, especially their fast bowlers, usually, although that wasn't necessarily the case today. Jeff Lemon, why don't you tell us all about it in 30 seconds?
All right. I will. From now, India started miles behind. It was an arm wrestle of a first session. 99 runs added, but the Australians prized out Rahane and Pujara. They got Mayank Agarwal just after the break. All those guys batted for quite a long time, but they only made 20s and 30s. Rishabh Pant made 20 in quick time, but then when he was out, they were still 183 behind and 8 wickets down. But then Washington, Sundar on debut, and Shardul Thakur in his second test, they put on 123 for the 7th wicket. Bit of swishing from the tail, and India got within 33 of Australia's score. That didn't look possible. Australia were none for 20-ish at the close.
Very good, Jeff. You've captured a lot inside 30 seconds there, as is your wont.
Oh, Josh Hazlewood, 5 wickets.
Josh Hazlewood, 557. His best figures at the Gabba, and this night time he's taken a 5-wicket haul in Test cricket. Let's start with the crucial passage of play of the day. So India, at one stage, a 6 for 186, the 123-run stand. Washington Sundar had the best possible ally in Shardul Thakur, because Thakur was willing to attack Nathan Lyon, popped him into the stands, a couple of sixes, broke the rhythm of the spinner, which meant he didn't get on top of them, and it meant they got to the second new ball in pretty good nick. Then they put the foot down, and they just kept accumulating and accumulating, and this resistance and this rear guard we talked about with India throughout the course of the series, that should have been the bit where things fell. 5 for 186, they lose Mayank Agarwal and Rishabh Pant, the danger man from last week, in quick succession. That should be where it goes, 6 down. But instead, that 7th wicket stand, two blokes who, well, one is on debut and one is playing his second test, I mean, it's been extraordinary. 19 players used in this series. Imagine what you would have thought had someone said to you back in the middle of December that Washington Sundar will top score, and maybe he didn't top score, maybe he did, doesn't matter, that he will be making the most important contribution throughout the course of this series. May have happened with him with the bat on debut here at Brisbane.
Yep.
It's an amazing tale.
Yeah, and well, it was an amazing tale in both senses of the word. Like, he's not really a tail ender. We know that he's opened the batting in under 19s, 50 over cricket for India, and can bat, and was one of those players who took up spin as well as a sort of extra, and then it's become his primary suit. But he looked so calm and controlled and composed. They barraged him, the Australians. They thought, oh, well, just bowl a few overs of bumpers at him and it will panic him and he'll get out. And it didn't happen. He just waited it out. He ducked underneath it. Shardul Tucker, meanwhile, at the other end, was just blocking out maidens from Nathan Lyon, not doing anything crazy at the start. It took quite a long time to take his time and get in, and played really nicely against the quick bowlers. His off drives, his cover drives were crisp and fresh, and you were like, this is really nice to watch. And, you know, we knew that he could bat a bit, but he's got a few first class 50s, but he wasn't necessarily like a player you're expecting to see bat that well. I think that gives you some indication of how you can play on this wicket once you're in. But when he attacked Lyon, it was after he'd been in there for 40 minutes or more and was well set at the crease. Then he was like, now I'm going to go after the spinner. So all of it was composed. There was no rashness, whereas Rahane got out to a rash shot, Mayank Agarwal got out to a rash shot. These two for the seventh wicket, none of them, they didn't play those shots.
Yeah, so he had six first-class 50s coming in to this test match. We've mentioned before that he only bowled for 9 or 10 deliveries in his debut against the West Indies a couple of years ago. But you look at the way, some of those drives down the ground with the limited backlift and fantastic, they were positively Tendulkar-esque. I mean, they really were, a couple of those straight drives. And then that bomb to move to 50 off Nathan Lyon, down the track, one step, two step, tried to pop him on the moon. I mean, it was a special moment of the day, one of a few times that Nathan Lyon was taken big today. I mean, he comes away with relatively economical figures, but I mean, I think that belies the fact that India were largely in control against him. At one point, Dacre did get beaten past the outside edge twice by Lyon in one over with additional overspin, but for whatever reason, he didn't stick with that attack and he kept trying to generate as much side spin as possible. And look, I appreciate why that would be the case. That's his principal weapon. But Lyon at Brisbane, often it's men around the bat, off the glove, off the handle, off the shoulder of the bat. And that wasn't really in play with usually just a short leg and a slip. So I admit they were able to dictate terms. And one other point here was that through the course of the Indian innings, until they were six down, they didn't have a partnership which exceeded 49. I think the 49 that was put on between
Agarwal put on with Pajara, wasn't
Rahane and Pajara, I think it was. Mm. So they put on 49. Other than that, there were a number of partnerships in the 20s, 30s and 40s, and they took it to the next level.
Mm.
And that meant that by the time that union was broken, the deficit was 50-odd, and suddenly it's a completely different test match. We're not talking about, well, Australia will bat again today, they'll bat quickly in the third innings, they'll declare, they'll give themselves oodles of time to bowl out India on a second occasion. Now this is completely re-evaluated.
Yeah, well, they took the deficit from 183 to 60. You know, from nowhere near it to you're actually in touch. And then some swishing from Mohammad Siraj and so on. It was really entertaining stuff. It was one of those sessions where, you know, you could feel that the kind of joy of the Indian side just having fun with it, saying, look, all of these are free runs at this point. We weren't expecting any of this. And it didn't feel that way in the first session. The difficulty of it, the way Josh Hazlewood bowled, especially, and Pat Cummins, beautifully, but the way Hazlewood, I'm remembering the way he set up Chateshwar Pujara, he was playing the sort of behind point stuff off the short balls really well. He was uppercutting and sort of dabbing almost with a cross bat. And he played that shot a number of times really, really well. And Josh Hazlewood, I know I've made this argument to you before, that he has the best bouncer out of all three of these Australian quicks, because he's not the scariest one that people think of, but he's more accurate and he's always at the grill. And he's at the grill much more often than the other two are. And so Pujara was going back trying to play one of these little late cuts, or one of these little uppercuts, late uppercuts, I guess, and the ball just zeroed in on him and cramped him up, and he sparted away in the air, didn't get caught, but it was about three balls later that he came forward on the front foot and Hazlewood bowled him the perfect delivery that just seemed away a touch, just kissed the outside edge, and that was all set up by the short ball a couple of balls previously, and it was a glorious passage of fast bowling to work over such a good defensive player.
Yeah, that's well summed up. It's about the fourth time in the series Pujara's copped an absolute beauty, and I love the fact that, yeah, it was set up by the bouncer. It wasn't just a normal bouncer. It was almost like an off-cutter bouncer. It hit the seam and jagged back towards him. It meant that Pujara didn't take evasive action, but it got big on him, I suppose you would say, and it meant that with that cordon, and they set it up with the deep point. They were bowling with a plan in mind. I mean, it was all about trying to draw the false stroke. In the end, it was a fantastic piece of bowling. But, yeah, Pujara and Rahane falling in relatively quick succession.
And that was Rahane, the other bit for Australia, of tactically, where they had Rahane edge through the gap between Slip and Gully twice.
A couple of times, yeah.
They put Matthew Wade in as a second gully, and that's where the next edge went.
Well, that's right. So, you know, floating slips at the Gabba, always a point of contention. But on this occasion, it worked after a couple flew through the cordon early on. It was fascinating to me that they had such contrasting plans to Pujara and Rahane early. Often you'd see, even with Hazelwood, five on the leg side. I don't think Josh Hazelwood would have bowled with five on the leg side in a test match maybe ever before. That's what he had with Pujara from the outset. Whereas with Rahane, two out for the hook and a mid on. Thoroughly different plans, and they had to try and stick to that, and they eventually made it work, and both of them were out before lunch. And as I say, after lunch, Agarwal, was it the first over after the interval?
Yeah, it was the first over after lunch, and the key thing with that was that Mayank Agarwal had been so disciplined through the morning session. He'd barely played a shot outside the off stump. He'd left and left and left and left, and then he didn't get a good ball from Hazelwood. He just got a wide ball, and he played a drive at it, just hadn't switched back on yet. And at the time, it looked like that was really going to cost them, because him batting with Rishabh Pant, it looked pretty good. It looked like a decent partnership. Rishabh had all those spaces they left for him at mid-wicket and cover. Like, go on if you want, champion. And in the end, he also got cramps trying to uppercut and slashed it into the gully, and Cameron Green took a good catch.
Yeah, all three of those batsmen, Rahane, Agarwal and Pant, when they were leaving the field, they were absolutely gutted, because I think they felt, in all three instances, it was mostly batsman error that led towards their downfall. And look, I was surprised that, with all that in mind, that Lyon did have three back on the leg side almost for the entirety of Shardul Thakur's innings. I mean, it struck me as odd that they didn't employ the approach of, well, if you're good enough, go over the top. Instead, they just left these blokes at deep square leg, deep mid-wicket and long on, and that was the status quo, and they really didn't veer from that plan. He stayed over the wicket almost exclusively to the right-hander and around the wicket almost exclusively to the left-hander, and he just couldn't get into the sort of rhythm that Lyon often does at the Gabba. So he's going to be bowling not under pressure in the second innings. I don't want to overplay this, but it's hard to avoid the fact that he's on 397 wickets and he's playing his 100th test
match. It's hard to avoid the fact that he's gone from 390 to 397 very, very slowly.
Yes, you know, that's right.
We were anticipating that he would get to 400 in this series, and now he might not across four test matches, which is pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. He's battled to get that penetration, and so, like, I think that is important. I think how he goes in the second innings is.
And just to close off on Washington Sundar, 3 wickets and a half century on debut, one of 5 visiting players to do that in Australia.
Good
Another,
stat.
A final word favourite, Titch Freeman, back in 1924. Oh. He made a half century and took more than 3 wickets on his test debut. The second Indian man to do it as well. So it puts it into some context how important Washington Sundar was. I mean, the point's been made before, but all 3 Indian players who took 3 wickets in the first innings, and 2 of them making a half century today, weren't in the test squad when they went to Adelaide back in mid-December. It speaks to their depth. It speaks to their planning. Yeah, sure, to an extent, it speaks to the fact that we're in COVID times and they needed net bowlers from the one day and T20 squads, but nevertheless, they're the ones standing up to be counted in one of the most important test matches seen in this country in a long time.
I'll give you another stat. It was India's 3rd highest partnership for the 7th wicket in Australia.
Okay.
The ones ahead of that were Vijay Hazare doing something special in 1948, and when Rishabh and Jadeja put on 200 for the 7th at the SCG 2 years ago. So they're in pretty good company. But how much fun was it? It was thrilling, because you like, this guy's on debut. This other guy bowled 10 balls in his one test match that was nearly 3 years ago and didn't play since and had to sit out most of that test. And they're out there under pressure. They're 180 behind, and they just peel off 120 in quick time, took everybody on. They had some hairy moments with the second new ball. They did get lucky a number of times against some really good bowling. It's not that Australia even bowled badly. Maybe the field's a bit defensive at times, but it was thrilling. It was one of those partnerships where the whole crowd gets into it. Even the Australians were, in the crowd, the Australian supporters were still enjoying some of what they were seeing.
Yeah, and even at the very, very end, I mean, I think we saw 13 from Mohammad Siraj, resourceful runs from the number 11, backing away. The fact is, as Damien Fleming pointed out on our call, he had a method, he had a plan. Navdeep Saini doesn't quite have a plan against short bowling yet, but nevertheless, it was entertaining, captivating cricket, and they went away with a 33-run deficit. And had you said that to India at the start of the day, they would have taken it every single day of the week.
Absolutely.
So obviously, the job is ahead of them tomorrow. Yep. In order to win the test match, they need to bowl Australia out in, let's call it, two sessions or thereabouts. Maybe it'll rain, maybe it won't rain, but let's say they need to bowl them out relatively promptly to give themselves a realistic chance.
Let's look at that when we throw forward just after the quick break, and we'll also have the Hall of Fame, and we'll also have the Player of the Day after the break. Now. A word about our sponsors, Cbus Superannuation. We're doing this through the lens of what happened when you played cricket, Adam, because you played a lot more than I did. When you went out to bat, what was your level of protective equipment?
As I got deeper into my career, I kind of went both ways. I'd occasionally bat in a hat, which was ridiculous, and sometimes I'd walk out in a chest guard and an arm guard when playing up the higher grades, and I would get bullied and teased mercilessly, and fair enough too.
So I pretty much entirely play pub cricket, where you're not supposed to bowl bouncers. That's a dangerous ball. But that also means, perversely, that no one wears helmets, because they're like, oh, well, you can't bowl a short ball. But you're also like, yeah, but none of you can play. Like, none of you can hit the ball.
As we've been talking about a little bit on The Final Word recently, actually, in an ideal world, you use your bat to defend yourself or you get out of the way, but it's not always that straightforward.
Yes, it's also about knowing what might go wrong when the best laid plans do go astray and having the appropriate protection.
Is this the bit when you link to the fact that Cbus offers flexible and affordable insurance options to people working in the building, construction and allied industries?
It's almost like you've got the same script that I do. It is that bit, and you have to make sure you have the right cover. And to do that, you can log into your Cbus account and review your options. This is the thing you can do if you have that cover. Disclaimers are that this information is general in nature. To consider if Cbus is right for you and to find out more about those insurance products, you go to cbussuper.com.au. You get a PDS that has the information for you. And I don't know if I'm supposed to read this bit out, but if you're interested, Cbus's trustee is United Super Proprietary Limited, ABN 46006261623. Cbus's ABN, however, is C75493363262, and their AFSL, which I assume is something you ask someone on the internet, AFSL, is 233792. So I hope if you've written down those numbers in case you need them.
Visit cbussuper.com.au/thefinalword. Sort out your super. Back to the show.
Sort it out. Sort it out, mate.
It's Final Word, India Daily. Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon here on a gorgeous Brisbane evening at the Gabba.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely signs behind us here. If you're watching us on YouTube, you already know that.
Yep.
But if you're not, you should join us on YouTube. We'll come to that in a sec.
This is a mural painted by the New Zealand graph artist Soffles, who did some work that we saw in Christchurch at the Graffiti Museum a few years ago when we were touring to watch Australia play New Zealand. Feels Final like, word callback.
I was going to say, it feels like a very long time ago since we went on that museum tour. Jeff, player of the day for Cbus Super.
It's got to be a duel. It's got to be chair, doesn't it? It has to be Sundar and Thakur, because they couldn't have done it without one another. It was how well Shardul Thakur played that let Washington Sundar play that well, that let him play with confidence, not have to worry about preserving his wicket, farming the strike, any of that. They just played.
Perfectly put. Hall of Fame, my nomination is the slog swept six that Washington Sundar struck whilst not even looking at the ball. It was poetry in motion. Usually I reserve the right to keep things on the field away from the Hall of Fame, but that was just too good for mine.
All right. Well, mine are on the field as well, but it was Mohammad Siraj stepping a metre outside his off stump and then trying to reverse hook it almost, like after the ball had passed him. It, literally a shot that Glenn Maxwell plays, but I'm like, only Glenn Maxwell can play that shot, but Mohammad Siraj tried and I appreciated that. And my other one was when Shardul Thakur was warming up before Australia batted, that little TV camera on the buggy came driving through and he nearly killed it with the ball. He bowled a full pace delivery and the buggy drove across the pitch that he was bowling on and he nearly smashed it and was like gesturing to them to get the hell out of his way. And that would have been a fairly expensive hit had it occurred.
A few very good candidates there. Who are we going to give it to? Is Sundar going to do the double?
Does he do the double, the daily double?
I think he does the double on the basis of what a tremendous day he's had in Test cricket. And I hope that it's the first of many Test matches that we get to see him play over the years. I hope that it's not just a case of he's here as the sort of swing man because he bats a bit, bowls a bit. I hope that they find a way to get him into the 11 more often than he is not. In terms of the throw forward,
well,
actually, maybe
What happens? How does this match work? Because what can Australia do? Can they try to pile it on for three sessions and then declare? But they also want to make sure they don't lose this game, because if they lose it, they might not qualify for the World Test Championship final.
This is a very real thing. I did some numbers this evening. if Australia lose here, and we'll use whole numbers, they'll drop to 690 odd in terms of the percentage of hypothecated points in the WTC. If they draw, they'll be at 7-1 something, which means they're at top. If they draw, they remain top. If they lose, they go to third.
Ooh.
And if they go to third, and if the tour to South Africa doesn't go ahead, then
that's it.
It's all over. They'll be beneath New Zealand. And, of course, India have four test matches to play against England. So there's that consideration.
So rather than risk trying to win the series with a more daring declaration, they might be more conservative and say, we'd rather draw the series and still get to play in the final.
And I wonder what Tim Payne thinks about the idea of being an Australian captain who lost to India 2 years ago and couldn't beat them on home soil with a full strength team for
but
the most part.
What about being a captain who gets to captain the World Test Championship final and win the first one?
All these considerations. Look, they can do both. They could make, the way David Warner's jumped out of the blocks, he's already 20 out of the 21 Australia made in six overs, four boundaries, three in a row against Siraj, albeit batting with discomfort. He took a quick single at one point and reached for his groin. So, and I think that's just muscle memory.
Haven't we all?
Yes, I think it's muscle memory from Warner. I think when he, and I understand this, when you hit the ball and you're getting to the other end, you're not thinking about your groin, but so to speak. But I think that he will bat with that view tomorrow, that he's done very well batting quickly in the third innings before. Tomorrow is the day where they'll need him to do that. They lead by 54 overnight, so let's do some maths. If they bat for two sessions at 120 runs per session, given the first session's extended, that gets them up towards a lead of near enough to 300, four sessions to bowl India out. That's what I'd be looking at.
That's the daring one. But if they can bat till stumps, I reckon they probably will and try to get 300 plus ahead. Or they might be bowled out for something and not be able to do either of those
things. And in rain, we don't know. I mean, you look at different apps and it's hard to gauge.
There will be some rain. It's just how long it holds us up, I think.
Yeah, so look, a lot of variables there. But I do wonder whether Tim Payne and the Brains Trust at Cricket Australia and the team management and all the rest have actually done that sort of evaluation about what a draw looks like against a loss in the context of a South African series. That, look, we hope it goes ahead. We will be there if it goes ahead, hopefully, all things being equal, but we don't know.
And they
can't know for sure either.
If you're listening to the podcast of this, you can watch the video on YouTube. If you're watching the video on YouTube, you can listen to the podcast. It goes both ways. If you like the show and you want to help us keep making it, patreon.com/thefinalword. And if you want to watch the India Daily from days 4 and 5, it'll happen on day 4 and 5. Be patient. Come on.
And if you are a new follower of The Final Word via YouTube, we have a really big interview coming out on probably Wednesday. And I reckon, without overplaying this, I reckon it's one of the best interviews we've ever done on The Final Word, and I cannot wait for it to be released. It's a different kind of interview for the show. It's not the sort of interview we've done before. It's with an Australian player. It's one to watch for. So, and with an IPL player as well, I should add. So for Indian fans who are watching on YouTube, it's relevant to the IPL too. So we'll leave it there. This is The Final Word, India Daily. Adam Collins, Jeff Lemon at the Gabba. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll do it all again tomorrow. So you know what I meant here. I had to go.